Welcome to the River of Calm's Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. And our Beyond the Music podcast gives you a closer look at the artists who are on the River of Calm. And today in our studio, we have the amazing artist and slack key guitarist, Jim Kimo West. Jim, welcome.
Aloha, Ed.
Hey, thanks so much for being on, and I'm sure our listeners are going to love to know about you. So I guess, you know, I won't hold you up with any surprise, you know, questions, but let's start off with, first off, how did you get started in music? What brought you to music? Was it divine intervention or your parents saying you have to play?
No, it wasn't my parents saying I had to play. But, you know, my older brother, I have a brother who's 10 years older than me, and he had a guitar, and he used to noodle around on it. And I think when I was 12 or 13, uh-huh. I discovered his guitar in the closet, you know, and I think it had like three strings on it. And uh-huh. I just started like, oh, this is fun. I started playing around with it. And then he saw that I was interested in the guitar. So he went out and got a set of strings mm-hmm. and a book and a capo and some picks, you know, he sort of set me up. And then once I got that, once I got that going, that was it. I was just completely mesmerized by music. And I, you know, locked myself in my room and just did nothing but play. Every time I'd come home from school, it'd be like, play the guitar for hours. And, you know, I was just, was just a great turning point. And I remember not many years later, I was playing professionally. I think I played my first gig professionally when I was 16. And, I was in college at the time. I'd started a little bit early, but I was actually studying art, visual arts. And once I started playing music live, and I thought, well, this is amazing. I'm having so much fun. And then they're also paying me at the same time. And I thought, you know, yes. I was thinking, I don't know about this art stuff. I think I like music better. And by the time I was 17, I had played, you know, enough. Mm-hmm. And professionally, I just thought, you know, this is definitely what I want to do. And I had no other thoughts about it. It was like, okay, that's it. I'm doing music. And so by the time I was 17, luckily, I had that I was completely determined that music would be my life, so I didn't have to think about it anymore.
Very cool. Now, first off, let's back up a minute, Jim. Now, where did you grow up? What part of the country?
Well, I was actually born in Toronto, Canada, my family mm-hmm. lived in Ottawa, which was the capital. My dad was in the Canadian military, actually. But, you know, when he came, mm-hmm. when he was ready they decided that Canada was too cold. They didn't like the winters anymore. So they had some friends who lived in Florida. So their friends said, hey, why don't you come down here? So we moved to Florida. And of course, as a kid, you know, all your friends, they might go on vacation to Florida, but, you know, it's like, hey, right. we're actually moving there, you know?
Sweet.
So anyway, we had that's where I grew up more or less. And that's where I started playing music, was in Florida. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't, nice. I ended up, you know, having a, you know, being pretty successful in Florida over the years. But at a certain point, I was, I knew I had to move to a bigger city, you know, to go any farther. And in those right. days, it was really, mm-hmm. it would have been New York City or LA. And at the time, right. of course, Nashville now is the place to be, really. But New York or LA at the time. And I thought, well, LA is a lot sunnier and warmer. I don't think I want to be up in the cold, you know. So I just made my way to LA, right. to Los Angeles.
Wow. So that's how you made it. Now, one thing I do want to back mm-hmm. up. When you were younger, did you have any lessons of any type, or was it all self-taught?
You know, I always tell people I have a perfect record. I have no lessons or classes. I'm completely self-taught, yeah.
Wow, no kidding. And you've made your living as a guitarist.
Yeah, and also in one form or the other. Also as a composer, too. I've worked, not so much anymore, but I used to do write a lot of music for film and TV. As a composer.
Yeah,
and
so I saw that.
So I've done, you know, I've mm-hmm. worn a lot of hats and yeah, you know, I mean, no formal education, but of course you're always learning. I mean, I would mm-hmm. read books and study books on orchestration, and I'd study, you know, taught myself to read. And I, mm-hmm. But also you learn so much from the other musicians you play with, because a lot of the other musicians I would play with in bands were schooled, and you learn so much mm-hmm. from who you're playing with. So that was a big part
totally.
Of my education.
That, And that just goes to show for the artists listening that you don't have to have a teacher. We have a podcast with a hammered dulcimer artist, Ted Yoder. Mm. Ted is self-taught, and he actually has won that national hammered dulcimer competition.
Wow.
He's just that good. So, yeah, you follow along that path, yeah, that you don't have to have formal education in your instrument, but you can successfully do it just with your own drive and determination.
Absolutely, yeah.
So was you growing up guitar-wise, who were your biggest influences guitar-wise? Was there anyone that spoke to you?
Well, you know, in the early days when I first started playing, my older brother listened to a lot of folk music, you know, and a lot of finger pickers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my first music that I listened to was whatever he listened to. And, you know, there were various folky, you know, guitarists who used finger picking patterns and things. And I can't remember which ones, but, you know, that was my first influence, was basically, and it served me well later on, because in my slack key guitar career, that's all finger picking, you know. So originally it was acoustic guitar finger picking. And then at a certain point, mm-hmm, I told my parents, I need to have an electric guitar, you know, and I think I had borrowed one from somebody, but I think by the time I was 15, I had an electric guitar. And of course, at that point I was listening to, you know, a lot of English bands, the Cream and Led Zeppelin. And, mm-hmm, you know, I was learning mm-hmm how to rock in those days. And, you know, I think by the time I was 16, I had a Les Paul and a Marshall amp.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was learning how to rock, you know, and I loved it, you know, but I never gave up the acoustic for the electric. You know, they were always side by side. Mm-hmm. I'd always still play acoustic as well, you know. And that's what I used to like.
Nice.
I remember liking that about the first Led Zeppelin record. I loved how rock and roll it was. But at the same time, there was some really lovely acoustic, you know, finger style playing too, and Jimmy Page. And I love that kind mm-hmm of nice balance, you know, of the two. So I've always played electric and acoustic.
Okay, and I'll pick up the slack key again in a moment, but let's get back to you. A young Jim, Chemo West. Were you Chemo by the way, or is that later?
Chemo is the name they give in Hawaii. If your name Jim or James, they call you Chemo, because they don't have a J in the language. You know, if you're Robert, they'll call you Lopaka. They have, it's sort of a Hawaiianized version of Jim or James. So I didn't really get that name until I started playing Hawaiian music.
Okay, so young Jim West, who is not Chemo yet, moves to Los Angeles. That was a brave jump from Florida to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay, what did you do when you got there?
Well, I had sort of met some people who had a band in Los Angeles, and they had needed a guitarist. And, you know, so it made my move really easy, because even though I had a very mm-hmm well-paying job in LA, in Florida, house music, house band type of situation. Really, I kind of had the best gig you could get. And, but I had a chance mm-hmm to move to LA, and join a band that was working. They were mostly doing, you know, covers mm-hmm and top 40 and stuff, but I thought, well, that'll make it really easy, because, I'll have work as soon as I get there. So that's
totally,
you know, that really helped out a lot. And, I think I played my first show with them 3 days after I got there, you know, so I was working right away.
Nice.
So,
and by the way, Jim, one thing on that, for those listeners who might be younger, there was a time, yes, when there was music 6 nights a week out in clubs and hotel lounges.
That's right.
Back in the day.
That's right. Yeah. And I did a lot of that. And it was really good, because, you know, you mm-hmm were often learning, you know, cover songs, of course, you know, whatever was popular.
Right.
So that was really good ear training, of course, you know, learning those songs and trying to really duplicate the parts exactly, you know, was very good training, mm-hmm, you know, and really develops your ear.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you were then with bands, and then you've had a pretty cool career, to be honest with you. What happened after you were with the bands?
Well, in the first couple of years I was there, I was playing in a lot of different bands. I did have a little day job for a while, I think maybe 6 months. But soon I was introduced to this guy Weird Al. Of course, everybody knows Weird Al plays accordion. He'd just gotten a record deal, and he was looking for a guitarist because he wanted to do some live shows. So I ended up auditioning for him and getting the gig. And, you know, I didn't really know much about him, but, you know, we did some rehearsals, and I'm learning his tunes at the time. And it's like, you know, these are very well crafted. I mean, I immediately had a lot of respect for him because he really works hard at crafting his songs. And you know, we did a little short little tour, a couple of very small little tours, mostly in the Northeast. And then we went to work on the second record, and that became a big hit on MTV. You know, it just kind of blew up on MTV. And then all of a sudden we were getting limousine rides and playing bigger venues and traveling on the tour buses, you know. And so over the years, Al's had this, you know, incredibly long career. And I think in part because he's always commenting on popular culture at the time, he just keeps sort of regenerating his fan base, you know. But he does quality work, and he's a very nice guy and great guy to work for. And he's just had this very long career that just keeps creeping higher and higher and higher. And the last CD, which was a few years ago now, but it actually entered the charts at number one on Billboard, you know, so it was a Billboard number one.
Nice.
And
no kidding. And you're playing places like Red Rocks and large places and symphony shows too.
Yes,
right?
Yes. We just did a tour that was called the Strings Attached Tour. And that was with a full symphony every night, including places like Red Rocks, which was with the Colorado Symphony, which was fantastic. They're a great, great band. But it was really, very, very fun. We played, I think, 67 shows in the U.S. and Canada, and it's quite an experience.
Now, how long have you been together with Al?
Since about 1983, if you can believe it.
83, you said?
Yep. A long time.
Wow, do you think it'll last?
We all, by 1985, we were asking that question. We were going, oh, I don't know if this can keep going on. You know, we've had a couple of good years. I don't know that, you know, it'll last. But it just, I don't know, it just seems to continue on and on. And
so with that, Jim, you're continuing on and on with Weird Al and doing the shows and having a great time, but there's something else must be beating within you because you are also a solo guitar player too.
Yeah. You know, I not long after I met Al, I was invited to go to Maui for a couple weeks. And I'd never been to Hawaii before. And I ended up going out with a friend of mine to visit another friend out in this little town called Hana, Maui. It's a very, very small town in East Maui, very remote. And we stayed at the house there for a couple weeks, and those folks had a lot of Hawaiian music records and a lot of Hawaiian slack key records. Of course, this is all on vinyl in those days. But I remember, you know, I think I had heard about slack key. I'd probably read something about maybe Ry Cooter or something, and you know, because I know he worked with some slack key artists. But as soon as I—
And can you tell us first off, sorry, okay, just for the listeners and for me too, Jim, what the heck is slack key? I mean, can you? I'm serious. I'm a piano player. I don't have slack keys.
That's
okay?
Right. Well, it's essentially what we call open tuning on the mainland, but it's more than just, of course, just the different tunings. But basically, what happened was in Hawaii, Hawaiians, you know, obviously didn't have guitars until Europeans came, and the way that happened, just as a short little story, was one of the first King Kamehameha had been one of the early explorers, George Vancouver, had given King Kamehameha a gift of three cattle, a bull and two cows, you know, because they didn't have cattle in Hawaii. So they were the property of the king, and that turned into a herd of cattle, which eventually became wild. They got out of their pens and they just were everywhere, and they were sort of terrorizing all the Hawaiians. They didn't know how to deal with cows and cattle. So by this, a number of years later, Kamehameha III, Kamehameha's successor, he had gone on a trip to California on a sailing trip, and he saw California at that point was part of Mexico. So he saw these Mexican cowboys, they called them vaqueros. He saw them with their ponies and their saddles and ropes and managing the cattle, you know, roping them. And so he decided he wanted to contract some of these vaqueros to come to Hawaii, bring their ponies, their saddles, and teach mm-hmm. his people how to manage the cattle so they could fix this problem of all the wild cattle. So the vaqueros came and taught the Hawaiians to be incredible cowboys. And this was even before the typical Western cowboys we know. You know, these guys, this was 20 or more years before that. But anyway, the vaqueros had guitars with them. And the Hawaiians had never heard guitars, and they were just mesmerized by the sound. The vaqueros would play at night, you know, around the campfire, and the Hawaiians were just completely blown away. And so when the vaqueros' contract was up, they left their guitars behind. And the Hawaiians, they didn't really know anything about tuning them, so they would just tune them whatever sounded good. And that meant, like, lowering some of the strings. You know, whatever sounded good to their ears. They would sometimes, you know, different families sometimes would have their own tunings with those families. Anyway, so slack key basically means an open tuning, but it's also a style of playing, you know.
Wow.
In Hawaii, they call it, the Hawaiian name is kiho'alo, which means to loosen the key, you know. When you loosen the strings, the bass notes become lower. So it's almost like, you know, with that one guitar, since they didn't have many instruments, that one guitar could be like a whole orchestra, you know. And so the style of playing with slack key is you're playing the bass notes, maybe an alternating bass pattern, but you're also playing the chords and the melody at the same time, you know. So they could create like a complete sound with one instrument.
I get that.
So when I was in this little town, Hana, they had a lot of these slack key records. And as soon as I heard that music, I just felt a connection to it. And I thought, first of all, I thought this music sounds like the place. It sounds like it's coming out of the earth, you know. It just feels so organic. And I understood what they were doing with the open tunings because I had played around with open tunings before, but I just fell in love with the music, and I didn't really try to learn it right away. I just liked to listen to it, and so it was just something I'd listen to in the car, and I just loved the sound of it, and I got into actual playing it by a very weird fluke, and it was kind of a sad story in a way, but I had a I was living, by this point, I decided I was going to live out there in Hana. I was actually spending time both in Hana and in LA, but I was spending a lot of time a lot of time out there because it's so beautiful. But I had a house guest come once, an old friend of mine who had been my roommate in Florida, and he was a chef. He was a young guy, but he had gone to the Culinary Institute, yes. So he'd become a great chef. Anyway, so we had him for a house guest, you know, for a week or so, which was nice, you know, fantastic to have a chef as a house guest, you know. But anyway, I had gone back to Los Angeles to do some work. I think I was doing a film or something, and I got word that he'd passed away suddenly, and he was only in his late 20s, you know. It was just, and I was just completely devastated, you know. And I just, you know, kind of comfort myself, I picked up the guitar and I just started playing this slack key song, you know. I just kind of wrote a song, a little slack key song. I'd never even really tried playing slack key in the style, but so I recorded it and, you know, sent it to his family, you know, just kind of as, you know, a little gift, you know. And I also played it for some other Hawaiian people, and then they said, you know, this is really good. You should do more of this, you know. And so then I got really interested in slack key, and I started writing my own slack key tunes in different tunings, you know. I'd use different tunings because each tuning would give you a different realm of possibilities, you know.
Right.
It's like every tuning is like a language, you know. Your chord shapes, everything you do with your fingers is going to be different for every tuning, you know? So it takes a little while to wrap your brain around that.
Yeah, but that's mind-boggling.
But yeah, so every tuning is like a different language, but every tuning, you can do things in one tuning that you could never do in another tuning, you know. So they have every tuning is very special. So I started writing these slack key tunes, and And I would record them because I wouldn't want to forget them, you know, so I'd record them. And at some point somebody said, oh, you've got 12 songs. Why don't you make a CD? And I had literally really never even considered making a CD. You know, I just wasn't even on my radar, you know. And it was like, really? I was thinking, maybe I should make a CD. Okay. And then a friend of mine who was an artist said, yeah, well, I'll do the cover, you know.
Nice.
And so all of a sudden I had my own CD. And I remember when they showed me the prototype, you know, just the mock-up of it. It was one of the greatest moments of my life. It was like, oh my God, I have my own CD.
Totally.
I couldn't believe it.
Absolutely.
So I was completely, you know, it was such a great moment. And then that CD was called Coconut Hat. A coconut hat in Hawaii is a hat that's woven with coconut frond leaves, you know. It's a very kind of a touristy thing, but I called it that because I was wearing so many hats at the time. I thought, well, this is my coconut hat, you know.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. That CD, that CD went on to be, you know, get a lot of attention. And of course I just kept doing it after that.
How many CDs now do you have?
I think I have 8 or 9. I have to think about it.
Now I'm going to fast forward.
Certainly 8 anyway.
The last one you had was Grammy nominated, Slack Key.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. That was last year. Very cool. How did that feel?
That was pretty amazing. Of course, it was completely unexpected. And I didn't do any big campaign or anything. I just, you know, I did my own social media posts and, you know, email things and stuff, but I didn't, you know, hire any publicists or anything like that. But I remember I was having coffee that morning, and I usually don't go to my phone and look at it right away. And I just leave it for a while and just relax before I get into the digital stuff. When I was having coffee, I don't even think I knew that was the day that they were coming out with the nominations. I wasn't even really considering it as a possibility, so it wasn't even on my radar. But anyway, I just noticed that my phone, the ringer was turned off. It was sitting across the room, but it just kept buzzing, and it was like, bzz, bzz, you know, vibrating, you know. And after a while, I thought, oh my God, I think somebody's trying to reach me. I better go see what's going on. And when I picked up my phone, there were like hundreds of messages, you know, saying congratulations, and it was like. And I'll have to say that was definitely one of the, you know, highlights of my life. It was just so mind-boggling to even think of it. I couldn't believe it.
How cool is that? Now, would you say, is that one of your most proudest moments, the moments you're most proud of? I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, I was certainly proud, but I was also sort of in shock too. You know, I was just like, this can't be real. And I went onto the website to make sure it was real.
How cool is that? Oh man.
I know.
Gee, well, cool. Now,
oh my Lord.
Now with all these songs that you've written and composed, first off, I have to always ask, what is your writing process? Do these come to you magically, or do you have to work at this?
You know, a lot of my stuff, first of all, whenever I've discovered a new tuning, there's a great sense of discovery because you're figuring out what you can do with that tuning. And there's all these incredible happy mistakes, you know? Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes when I'm trying a new tuning, I'll write 4 or 5 or 6 songs just from the inspiration of that tuning.
Wow.
And that's one of my biggest sources of inspiration, is just discovering a new tuning on the guitar, because it's, you know, everything is up, you know, there's so much chance involved, and you really don't know the chord shapes that well, and your ear is sort of leading you on, you know. It's you can't rely on your typical chord positions, you know, like you would go to just out of from, you know, your previous experience. You're really being led by your ear, you know. So that's one of my biggest sources of inspiration, is trying a new tuning. And generally I compose most when I'm, you know, when I'm in a mode where I'm really playing a lot, and whether it's just practicing or, you know, getting really loose and getting, and you know, the more I play, the more that connection happens. And sometimes I've had songs that just wrote themselves magically, just, I mean, in minutes, you know, just the whole piece, everything.
Nice.
And you just, And when that happens, you just have to sit there and think, oh my God, how did that happen? You know, that was just, I've got this complete song that, you know, really works well. And it's, and it just came together like that, you know.
You're in the flow. You're in the zone there.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I think that's what happens. So yeah. When you're in that zone, you're just so receptive, mm-hmm. you know, that the music just comes out. And I think that's the same for everybody, really.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, with all these songs that you've written, I know just like children, it's hard to name the one that's your favorite. But at this moment of this podcast, what is calling to you as your one of your favorite songs that we can play?
You know, I'm always sort of in love with the last CD that I do, you know, mm-hmm. and that tends to be my favorite. So I guess, you know, I like the opening track a lot. It's called Tide Pools, and it's kind of a river, very reflective. It's calming, but it's also sort of got a very mysterious, reflective nature, which I'm also always drawn to that mood, that kind of sort of somewhere between calming and happy and maybe a little sad or a little introspective.
There's
something about that.
Yeah.
You know, that really attracts me. You know, there's something about that. I'm drawn to a lot of that kind of emotion in playing. So I let, you know, Tide Pools is sort of very representative of that. And it's fairly recent. So
I can resonate with,
that one.
Being in that pocket of, you know, somewhat inspiring, but somewhat wistful and calling. And
yes.
Oh, cool. Well, our producer, the wonderful pianist, Eric Baikalis, will now play Tide Pools for us. So this is Jim Chemo West and Tide Pools. And that was beautiful, Jim. Tide Pools by Jim Chemo West. That is cool. Now,
mahalo.
Hey,
thank you.
Amen. Now, where can we find your music? Where can our listeners find your stuff and know more about you?
Well, you know, I guess the best place is my website, but I you know, my website is jimkimowest.com, jimkimowest.com. But you know, I mean, you can type me into any of the streaming services or iTunes or Amazon. I'm kind of pretty much everywhere out there.
I mean, let's put it this way. Jim has a Wikipedia page about him. Okay. So you're out there, buddy. You really are. Good gosh. Now, with all the success you've had, you're playing Red Rocks, you're playing with symphony orchestras, you know, you're in Hawaii, you're seeing all these magical places. Do you, as an artist, what do you have fears? What is your worst fear? Let's just get right to it.
I used to be very, like when we would tour with Al, I'd have a nice steady source of income. And then when a tour would finish, I'd get a little fearful, like, okay, where's my next dollar coming from?
Right.
But, but I can say now, because of my slack key career, that has really, eliminated that. You know, now when Al says, I'm going to take this year off, then I go, oh, great. I can do more of my music. You know,
nice.
It's a perfect balance. You know, I have been around, and my music has been on the streaming services since the beginning. So, you know, I don't have the fear anymore that I used to have, about all of a sudden my work is gone and, you know, what am I going to do? But nowadays it's something I don't even think about. I really welcome to have a year off where we're not touring and I can focus on my music. So it's,
got it.
It's kind of a blessing, you know?
I got it. Now, do you have another CD in the works?
Well, I've been recording a lot before this tour started in early June, but before that I had recorded maybe 15 or 20 new tracks.
Slacker.
And they were sort of from different, I was recording anything and everything without thinking in terms of, you know, putting it all on one particular CD.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was doing, I decided I would, you know, put tracks out individually as singles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as it's all coming together, then maybe next year there will be actual CDs with these tracks on them. And one of them will be a very relaxing slack key record, kind of like my last one.
Right.
The second one will be more of an eclectic record, which was like my previous record, Guitar Stories, was based on slack key tunings, but it had a lot of world music influence. And, it was very, in a very eclectic mix, you know, a sort of a multi-genre record. And so this, you know, the additional CD will have tracks like that, more of a, an eclectic mix, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's a third one I've been thinking of that, is sort of, I would say sort of a dreamy, Americana based, but very mm-hmm. cinematic and dreamy, you know, sort of something very ethereal, but also bringing, relying on a lot of Americana acoustic elements, you know, and a lot of, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it. It's just an idea I have in my head.
But you've got a lot
at this point
in the can right now. And it's very smart of you and astute of you to release a single a month and then introduce the compilation on a CD down the line.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the idea will be like, maybe I'll release five singles from the relaxing slack key record.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the CD comes out, it'll have those five singles plus another eight or nine new tracks, you know?
Right. Right.
So that's sort of the idea. So when the CD comes out, people will have a, you know, motivation to, you know, to get that, because it'll include new tracks as well, you know?
You have earned the second V in the word savvy. You are a savvy marketer. I'm telling you what, that's good. Now, with that, let's talk a little bit more. What's one thing that nobody knows about Jim Chemo West? What's an unusual thing? Share something with us.
Wow.
You're not an axe murderer or anything. We hope not on that, right?
No. Geez. Well, I mean, I like to fish. Not many people know that. I was an avid fisherman for a long time, and that's something that brings me a lot of pleasure. Not, I guess not many people know that.
Is that from Hawaii, time in Hawaii, or was this?
No, it's both. You know, when I was a little kid, my grandfather taught me how to fly fish, and I learned that. And then when I grew up in Florida, I had my, you know, sort of Huck Finn buddies that we go fishing, you know. And, and then once I spent time in Hawaii, then I discovered that, you know, that. So that's always been, you know, part of my life. And
nice.
You know, whether you catch fish or not, I think it's really more about just being in a beautiful spot, being out in nature, you know, and enjoying the nature. And, you know, because I don't care if I don't catch a fish, it's like, hey, I had spent, you know, a few hours out in some, you know, really lovely nature. So
totally.
I think that's part of the draw to, you know, of that to me, you know.
I think that equates also to golf, at least for me. It's like, okay, I'm out in nature. Mm-hmm. If I don't do anything, I'm good. It's just being one with this, the beauty of nature. And
absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Now, so if we, the River of Calm, were able to buy a billboard for you, one on Sunset Strip, one in Florida, one back up in Ottawa and across the country that has Jim Kimo West's finest advice, what would you put on that billboard?
Oh, wow. That's a great question.
Thanks, man. I'm still trying to cover up for the slack key confusion I have in my brain. Okay, but back to you.
I would say maybe, you know, don't forget to relax.
No,
Some people don't relax. They just never take the time out to, you know, to chill out. You know, I know I've had house guests in Hawaii, you know, where things are, you know, sometimes I'd be in Hawaii for so long, I wouldn't know what day it was. And it was like, well, I don't really care what day it is. This is sort of before, you know, smartphones and everything and internet. And it was like, well, when I go into town, I'll pick up a newspaper and then I'll find out what day it is.
I like that.
So, you know, but sometimes I would have house guests that would, they just wouldn't be able to, it was, they just couldn't relax, you know. There was like, they were just kind of nervous and like, what do we do now, you know?
Right.
And it was like, hey, you know, actually, you really can relax, you know. You can take the time and just let all that stuff go, you know. And that's one thing I've learned about, you know, from spending time in Hawaii. We call it island time, you know.
Nice.
It's like, hey, you know.
It's true.
You know, sometimes it's frustrating if you've called somebody to come fix your refrigerator, you know, and then, you know, of course he doesn't show up, and then you see him at the store. He goes, "Oh my, sorry, my cousin came into town, and you know, we went fishing," and it's like, that's island time, you know. It's like, that's okay, it's all good, you know.
Oh wow, but you were right though. We're conditioned, at least I would say here, maybe in the mainland, and with all the, you know, stress of today, that being busy and overworked is a badge of courage or something. You know, that it's
right.
Yeah. But you're right. Don't forget to relax. That is so cool and so slack key at the same time.
It is.
Oh man. Well, Jim, I really appreciate your time on there. And there you have it. A behind the scenes look at artist and composer and slack key guy, Jim Kimo West on the River of
Calm. Thank you so much, Ed.
You're welcome. Beyond the Music Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. May the calm be with you.